Blog Talk Radio.
The Late Shift with Stephen Bell is presented live and uncensored and contains adult language. The views, opinions, and verbiage expressed do not reflect those of LordsOfPain.net, Lords of Pain Radio, Blog Talk Radio, or any of their respective advertisers. That's all on me, for better or for worse. Regardless, listener discretion is advised. Now let's do this thing. Let's give it a bee-bop-bow. And now, coming to you live from the Late Shift Studios, recapping SmackDown Live here on Lords of Pain Radio, it's the Late Shift with Stephen Bell, with your host, well, me. Again, and yeah, still me. Let's do this thing, all right? Let's go. Do the crunch guitar. Come on, love. Well, hello, everybody, and welcome once again to The Late Shift with Stephen Bell. I am your host, Stephen Bell, which, as always, is exactly why my name is in the title. How are you guys doing? Hopefully all kinds of awesome going around out there. We've had, you know, this is kind of the culmination of 3 days of main roster WWE coming our way. We had, of course, the pay-per-view on Sunday, Raw last night, and SmackDown this evening. Still got NXT to come tomorrow, but that's not main roster, so, you know, that's kind of its own little universe over there, if you will. Its own little WWE universe, if you will. Oh, man. Yeah. Puns. But yeah, it's been an eventful last few days, but at the same time, it has not been terribly eventful, which has been a little bit of the problem. We've had a lot of wrestling over the last little bit, and some things have changed. We got a new Raw Women's Champion. We got, the damn U.S. title has now changed hands twice. Spoiler alert. We got all these different shifts and changes going on. Crowned a new Intercontinental Championship number one contender. We got all this stuff going down, but at the end of the day, it doesn't really seem like a whole hell of a lot of things have changed. Raw last night was, if you listen to the Late Shift of last night, you know that it was very much down the middle, in my opinion. There was really nothing of note that happened, aside from the fact that, you know, okay, the Intercontinental thing was cool, the match was good, and we crowned ourselves the new number one contender, and okay, that's peachy keen and fine. But at the same time, nothing else really happened of note on the show. It was just kind of like, okay, things are happening. And it was what it was. Tonight, SmackDown had a little bit of that same vibe. There was really nothing overwhelmingly just awesome about it. It was just kind of like business as usual, if you will. You know what I mean? It was very paint-by-numbers down the middle. And, you know, I mean, that kind of is what it is, I suppose. Did it hurt the show overall? Well, we'll discuss that and dig into it a little bit deeper as we go along. But we did have very similar to Raw last night. We had one super pretty damn good match. It wasn't as good as last night's match, but we had a pretty damn good match that had some great things to go along with it. It's been an interesting last couple of nights of wrestling. It's weird to think that as divisive as Payback was, Payback might wind up being the superior of the three straight nights of wrestling that we've had over the last like 72 hours. So, We'll see. We'll talk our way through this one, of course. If you would like to join in the conversation and have your voice be heard and, you know, tell me whether you agree with me, whether you don't agree with me, whatever it is you may want to say, please feel free to do so. You can get at me on Twitter at Stephen F. and Bell, or you can find me on Facebook. Just look for The Late Shift with Stephen Bell. You can like the page and get all your updates and all the upcoming shows and specials and this and that and what have you. Yeah, plenty of ways to get to me. You can also just comment there on Lords of Pain underneath the headline for the show and all that good stuff. But as per usual, we're going to kick this thing off the way that we always do here on The Late Shift. It is time for the
Heat Seeker.
Yes, it is indeed time for the Heat Seeker. And this time around, I don't think I'm going to be seeking that much heat. It's a hot topic, so I guess that hot plus heat, I mean, maybe that makes it heated, but this is not going to be exactly a hot take. I think that the thing we're going to talk about here is something that a lot of people kind of agree with, or at least kind of being like, eh, okay. You know, it's hard to dispute the fact that Chris Jericho is presumably tonight wrapping up what has been an excellent run, just a fantastic run for him since coming back to WWE, you know, about a year and a half ago. He had been on some runs that weren't exactly the most exhilarating and whatnot. He infamously came back only to lose to Fandango at WrestleMania, basically. He came back to spontaneously team with Ambrose and Roman Reigns against the Wyatt family and, you know, the murderation that was Braun Strowman when he was first coming up, and it didn't really go anywhere. There was a little animosity and stuff, but it didn't really amount to much of anything. So when he came back this last time, people were like, okay, cool, you know. But I don't think that anybody was overwhelmingly just hyped over the fact that we were going to be seeing Chris Jericho do a whole bunch of awesome stuff. You know what I mean? I'm always excited to see Chris Jericho because I'm a dyed-in-the-wool, diehard Jericho-holic since about 1996 or so. I remember seeing him come into WCW, and he was about as vanilla could be. He had virtually no character whatsoever. He was just the smiling babyface. You know what Apollo Crews is right now? That is exactly what Chris Jericho was when he came into WCW back in 96. And just no discernible personality. He didn't get hot over anything. He was a great competitor, and he worked real hard, and he was very athletic, and man, the fans liked him all right and everything, but he gave you no reason to invest in him. But I invested in him because I thought he had a cool look. I liked his athleticism. It was just something about Chris Jericho that I was able to snatch onto, you know, just like, okay, this guy is pretty cool. And as his character evolved and he eventually turned heel and he had that extended feud with Dean Malenko and all the awesome stuff that we know of him from WCW with Ralphus and the whole Greenberg feud and just everything all encompassed, I was flat out hooked, you know, by the time he left WCW and came to WWE. So I'm a Jericho-holic. I'm a diehard Jericho-holic. I always will be a Jericho-holic. He is one of my favorite wrestlers of all time, one of my favorite guys just in the history of the entire business. And so I'm always excited to see him, but that having been said, again, when you're dealing with a guy who has showed up just a job to Fandango, who has showed up just a job to the Wyatts alongside the former Shield dudes, a guy who showed up, you know, just to spontaneously kind of have a pseudo-feud with, like, Dolph Ziggler here and there, I mean, the last, like, 5-6 years of Chris Jericho's career have not been very noteworthy in any way, really. He's kind of just done stuff. Ever since that last big run where he was wearing the suit and he feuded with Shawn Michaels and, you know, he won the championship a few times and there was Jericho's show. Ever since that really long, just badass run, arguably the best run of his career, it's kind of hard to say that Chris Jericho has done anything really of note. About the most exciting thing that Jericho has done since around 2011 or so was when he surprisingly showed up at the Royal Rumble and nobody really saw it coming. That was really exciting and that was really cool, but that's not exactly a top-tier moment. You know what I mean? I mean, it's cool, and it'll live forever in the legacy of surprise appearances and Royal Rumble and stuff like that. We're going to see that clip for a long, 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 long time, but and that's not exactly an accomplishment. Now, if he had come back and won it, okay, it would be a different story, but that's not what happened. So Jericho comes back this time, and everybody is kind of just waiting. You know, I think we were all waiting when he came back around Royal Rumble of this last year, not 2017, but 2016. When he came back, we kind of expected, okay, he's probably going to get in a feud with somebody, they're going to work at WrestleMania, and then Jericho's going to go away again. Because he, of course, has a lot of things on his plate. He has been trying to break into a little bit of an acting career here and there. He's done a few shows, mostly online shows. There's the I'm Chris Jericho show. And there was the other one that I can't remember the name of off the top of my head, but he was like a cop, and he just sat in a car arguing with his partner and stuff like that. I recently saw a show actually advertised that's going to be on some major network, I believe, that is essentially a ripoff of Chris Jericho's web show that he did for, I believe, Comedy Central. It was very funny. It was legitimately very funny. So was I'm Chris Jericho, pardon me. So he's been trying to do some acting stuff. He was in one of the Sharknados. He, of course, has been working with Fozzy and recording albums and going on tour and stuff like that. They play a lot of festivals and a lot of overseas, you know, European-type stuff where metal is still kind of a big deal. And, you know, hey, he's been a busy guy. Chris Jericho doesn't exactly rest on his laurels. You know, in between all that, he's writing books and whatnot. So this is not a dude who's content to just lay back and do nothing. So when he's not around wrestling, he's off doing other stuff. And the magnitude of all that stuff, having so much on his plate, dictated for a long time that he was only showing up for very brief periods. And it was actually a period where he showed up and he was only working house shows. You know, he was only working house shows here and there. He wasn't doing TV or anything like that. I believe that was actually in the mix last year when he did that match with not last year, but you know what I mean, a couple years ago, when he did that match with the Shield guys against the Wyatt family. He had kind of been doing some house show things around in there. Thus, he was around, but nobody really expected to see him. You know what I mean? So he's been doing things of that nature. And this time, we didn't think it would be any different. He would show up, work through WrestleMania, probably stick around for a month afterwards to wrap up the feud, do one last job to whoever he was feuding with, and then be out the door. And it looked like things were going to go according to formula. He showed up. He started a tag team and eventually a feud with AJ Styles, who had just showed up at the Royal Rumble. They had a match at WrestleMania. Jericho won, surprisingly. But then the next month, he lost to he didn't actually lose to AJ Styles, did he, the next month? No, because AJ went on to be the number one contender. But the feud kind of offhandedly continued. You know what I mean? We thought that it was going to be the same general thing. He's going to feud with AJ and he's going to go away. That didn't happen. He stuck around. He was just kind of doing random stuff. He was feuding with Dean Ambrose out of the middle of nowhere, and it was like, okay, and that was a little bit lackluster. Didn't quite live up to everything that we hoped it would be. And then the summer starts coming along, and he's messing around with Kevin Owens. He's teaming with Kevin Owens and doing some stuff there, and it was like, okay, is this going to be a feud? Is this going to, you know, what is this going to be exactly? He's feuding with Enzo and Cass alongside Kevin Owens, which didn't exactly seem like, you know, a fantastic role for either Jericho or Kevin Owens, to be honest. Nothing against Enzo and Cass, but they weren't exactly the hottest and most established team going into SummerSlam of last year. They were popular, but, I mean, come on. These are two world-class talents. One of them a first ballot Hall of Famer, and they're just wrestling the new tag team guys. You know, like, what the hell is that? Hell, Enzo and Cass still haven't won a tag team championship in WWE or NXT or anywhere else that they've ever been. So, I mean, it was a little bit of a head-scratcher there, but they made it work, and then it started to grow. And next thing you know, for the entire, I would say, last half of 2016, Chris Jericho and Kevin Owens were the best thing on Monday Night Raw, period. I remember coming on here and doing the late shift and saying every single Monday that they were the best thing on Monday Night Raw, and Jericho started getting random weird crap over. He had been robbed of his blinky jacket in the feud against Dean Ambrose, so suddenly there's scarves everywhere. There had been scarves prior, but this time it was really blatant, and he got a scarf over. People were booing him and bringing scarf signs, and people were into the scarf for whatever reason. He got the word "it" over. You better watch it. He got that over. He was, and then along came the list. The list made its appearance. He just kind of randomly started talking about it. Next thing you know, everybody's popping for the list left and right. These guys are supposed to be heels, but they were the most popular guys on the show, arguably. Guys like Roman Reigns and Seth Rollins are feuding with these dudes, and they're actively getting booed because everybody likes the damn list of Jericho so much and the interaction between those two guys. So it was a really great run. It was completely unexpected. We all expected Jericho to be gone by May, probably, at June at the latest, and he had stuck around. And we, of course, got word after the fact. I got word listening to Talk It's Jericho, and anybody else who listens to Talk It's Jericho got word as well. He had kind of been working on kind of short-term deals. He had, you know, signed on for X amount of dates, X amount of months there for a little bit, and it kind of, you know, it that one ran out. So he signed on for another month or two, and then he signed on for another month or two. And he just was kind of signing short-term deals and working it out and just kind of figuring at the end he was going to stick around. I think that all kind of culminated with and when they decided that the whole Kevin Owens thing was really going to come to a head, and it very much did come to a head. And that's been about the last, you know, 4 or 5 months of Chris Jericho. We had, of course, the big attack that went down at the Festival of Friendship after the Royal Rumble. Then, of course, well, not right after, but you know what I mean, between Royal Rumble and Fastlane, I believe it was, we had the Festival of Friendship and everything that went down there. Well, no, it wasn't between those. Damn, my head is all messed up tonight. I apologize. But it was after the whole Goldberg thing, because Kevin Owens blamed Jericho for the whole Goldberg thing, right? No? No, he did screw. He screwed Kevin Owens out of the title. Jesus, man, I'm sorry, guys. My head is not on my shoulders correct. It's been an interesting few days. I'm just trying to soldier through, but I apologize for having wrong information. Anywho, getting back on track here. things started heating up, is what I'm getting at. And we knew that it was going to culminate in a big, big way. It did at WrestleMania, and we had Kevin Owens becoming the WWE United States Champion. That then went on to what we saw on Sunday. Jericho kind of unexpectedly got the win in what was a pretty damn good match, a very heated battle with great psychology. They had a wonderful match for the U.S. title. Jericho gets the victory. Everybody kind of halfway expected Owens to get the victory and to hurt Jericho, or, you know, quote-unquote hurt Jericho somewhere over the course of it. And then Jericho would go off and do whatever he was going to do, Fozzy-wise and all that good stuff, because he's got a lot of tour dates coming up that are just already booked. We know that Jericho and Fozzy are going on tour. And furthermore, they just released the first single, I assume, the first song off of what is presumed to be a new album here coming up before too terribly long. It's called Judas, and it's pretty rocking. New video, new song, all that good stuff floating around out there just within the last couple of days. So it's been pretty obvious that Jericho's going to be going to do other stuff. So a lot of people expected maybe he would lose out on Sunday and then he would be gone. But I was questioning that a little bit, because there was the caveat that if Jericho won, then he went to SmackDown. And I thought that sounded kind of intriguing, you know, that they would just do kind of a last minute switch. And then if Jericho decides to come back after he leaves for a little while, he'll be part of the SmackDown crew. And that's exactly what wound up happening. Jericho gets the victory. He is now part of the SmackDown roster. That is a good place for him. There's a lot of young talent over there on that SmackDown roster. And I think that having a veteran presence like Chris Jericho around to feud with, to go to ask questions and stuff, just to be a locker room leader, is a very valuable thing, in my opinion. I think that's a good place for him, being over there on SmackDown. And that kind of culminated to this evening. The main event of SmackDown this evening was the rematch for the United States Championship. And we won't break it down in full, but we will talk about, of course, the result and what happened afterwards, because Kevin Owens won. He had given Jericho a DDT outside near the staging area, where it's just basically a carpet over concrete. And Jericho, from that point forward, was selling that he was basically dazed, concussed, something of that sort. He was kind of out of it from that point forward. Owens, of course, is like, you know, a shark with blood in the water, and he sees that. He immediately goes for it. He nails the pop-up power bomb, and he gets the 1-2-3. So your new United States champion, once again, the United States champion, is Kevin Owens. And afterwards, as expected by many of us, he continued the attack. He hit Jericho with another pop-up power bomb. He's yelling at him and screaming at him. He went to pick him up again, throw him into the ropes for another pop-up power bomb, but Jericho couldn't run into the ropes. He collapsed before he was able to make it to the ropes. He's that hurt. He's that messed up, and he's that concussed and jacked up. So Owens leaves again. They're trying to help Jericho out of there, a bunch of referees and stuff. He is obviously rather dazed. He doesn't know where he is and where he's going and stuff like that. And Owens attacks him yet again. He wrapped a chair around his neck and head and everything, and then shoved him into the ring post. Jericho falls down. He's making ghastly noises and things of that nature. He is obviously grievously injured, and Kevin Owens is standing tall, the new face of America and your United States champion. So, that's exactly what I anticipated we would get here. I think that it is far more valuable for Kevin Owens to put out Chris Jericho, to take out Chris Jericho in this fashion and have him gone for a good stretch of time. He full-on injured him. It wasn't just a little thing. He didn't just beat the guy. He took him out. And Jericho is presumably going to be gone for at least a few months, one would assume. I thought that was a more valuable thing to do than to just have Kevin Owens beat him at Payback. That would have been fine and well and everything, but it wouldn't have had the same oomph behind it. And it frankly wouldn't have been as big a rub, and it wouldn't have given as big a push to Kevin Owens. So the fact that Kevin Owens lost at Payback actually worked out, because it gave the opportunity for him to do something more impactful to Chris Jericho tonight on SmackDown. And that's where this run of Chris Jericho is appearing to end. The run of Jericho, man. It appears that this is going to wrap it up for now. He's going to go. He's going to do Fozzy stuff. I don't know if they're going to be doing, he maybe got to wrap up a record. I don't know exactly when when the next record is coming out or anything. But they're, of course, like I said, they've already released a new song, a new video for it, and everything is out there. He's got all these tour dates coming up, tour dates for the next multiple months at various festivals and this and that and so forth and so on. And there, of course, he's also got another book coming out here before too terribly long. I believe it is his fourth book will be coming out here, I believe, by the end of the year. I'm not going to swear to that, but I think it's coming out relatively soon. I know it's already got a name and stuff like that, and I don't know if he's polished off writing it and if it's ready to be released, but I know that it's coming up here before too long. So Chris Jericho, once again, has a lot on his plate. Plus, I believe that, but I'm Chris Jericho. I believe I just saw Jericho tweet out here last week or week before, but I'm Chris Jericho was picked up for another season. It is a YouTube television show, I believe, but it was picked up for another run, so he's going to be doing that as well. Chris Jericho, it looks like, is not going to be around for a while, and I've mentioned this before as a Jericho-holic. It's kind of scary for me every time that Chris Jericho leaves, because Chris Jericho has gone on record he's gone on record as saying that when he leaves, when he's done with the wrestling business, he doesn't want any hype. He doesn't want to do some big Shawn Michaels final match with a career on the line or Ric Flair career on the line thing. He doesn't want to do something big, some sort of big production or anything. He wants to just leave and then just not come back sometime. And we're getting to the point to where that could be any time now. Jericho's in his mid-40s. He, as said, he's got a lot on his plate. He is just coming off of what many consider one of the strongest runs of his entire career. I would say that it is probably his third best run, the third best run of his career. I would rank this above what he was doing in WCW, because I think that best run was probably Suit Jericho when he was, you know, ripping off Nick Bockwinkel and doing all that cool stuff, feuding with Shawn Michaels and Jericho and just all the stuff that went on there. That was awesome. I personally feel that that is the best work of his career. And then you would have first WWF run when he was, you know, the Ayatollah of Rock and Rolla and, you know, making fun of Stephanie and all that good stuff that he did for that long stretch of time. And then I would say it would be this run is really kind of the best. And then probably WCW Jericho. WCW Jericho was awesome, but he never got a chance to really do much of anything, frankly. Everything that he was able to pull off in WCW, all those clips that you see of him in WCW, that was all just him making chicken salad out of chicken shit. He was never given an opportunity to rise above, which is why he came to WWE in the first place. So this has been a fantastic run, and a lot of people who were hating on Chris Jericho last time he was around, people who were hating on Chris Jericho this time last year when he was feuding with Dean Ambrose and stuff like that, people saying that he was washed, people saying he wasn't as good, people saying he needed to just go away. A lot of them, most of them, I would say, have changed their tunes. I've seen a lot of people who were saying bad things a year ago who are now saying, man, this Jericho run has been great. So, yeah. This will probably wrap it up for this time around, and hopefully Jericho will be back, I guess. I mean, I guess I hope for that. I mean, everybody kind of wants to go out on top, which is, again, why I'm a little bit worried that maybe he won't come back. Maybe he just won't show up this next time. Maybe he'll just start doing spots. You know, maybe he'll be kind of like The Undertaker or something, and just every once in a while Chris Jericho will show up, and it'll be kind of cool. He'll become the nostalgia act to a degree and only work every once in a while. I don't know that that's necessarily his bag. I don't know that that's something that Chris Jericho would really do. He seems more like he would want to work a little bit of a regular schedule. Like I said, he's a guy who stays busy. He's not a dude who just wants to rest on his laurels. He kind of seems to be a dude who likes to be constantly moving and in constant motion doing different stuff. So as long as he is physically capable, I'm going to guess that maybe he wants to keep coming back, even if it is only in a role like he had prior where he's only working house shows and stuff, and we don't even see him on TV. I could see that scenario happening again. But who really knows? We might not see Chris Jericho until the Royal Rumble of next year, or, you know, or WrestleMania of next year, or we might not ever see Chris Jericho again. Or, hell, we might see him in, like, 3 months or something. He might be back by SummerSlam to get his revenge on Kevin Owens. It's a big question mark as of right now. We don't know what to expect next from Chris Jericho, but I feel that everything is on the table. Everything is on the table. He could be back pretty soon. He could be back months from now. He could be back almost a year from now, or he might not come back at all. So it is time officially to stop and reflect upon this run of Jericho. All the things that encompass it. We have gone from Blinky Jacket returning at the Royal Rumble all the way to Blinky Scarf and The List and It and all the wonderful things that Chris Jericho has brought us over the course of the last long about year and a half. And some of it has been a little bit lackluster, you know. I mean, some people weren't thrilled with the AJ feud. I loved the AJ feud personally. Some people weren't thrilled with the Ambrose feud. I really enjoyed the Ambrose feud. I thought that Ambrose Asylum match was pretty crap. But for the most part, I enjoyed the Ambrose feud. I enjoyed everything that Jericho has done over the course of this last little bit. But of course, you would be an idiot not to see that, a stupid idiot even, to recognize and call out the fact that, of course, some of it was better than some other stuff. You know what I mean? But I would say that for the most part, we had good stuff from Chris Jericho during his time with us this over the course of the last year and a half or so. And I'm going to be sad to see him go. It's going to be not cool to not have Chris Jericho around. But when he comes back, if he comes back, he will presumably be on SmackDown. He can do some cool stuff with some of the young talent there. We could see the potential for Chris Jericho versus Shinsuke Nakamura, which is a match that happened at a live event over in Japan. They requested to work with one another and were given the opportunity to do so. And based on all I've heard, it was a pretty good match. I've seen parts of it, and it was pretty good. There's plenty of things that Chris Jericho should be able to come back and do. And I look forward to seeing whatever it is that is next for Chris Jericho. I'll be buying the new Fozzy record whenever it comes out. I'll buy the book whenever it comes out. I'll watch whatever TV show or movie he wants to do. I'm a Jerichoholic, but aside from being a Jerichoholic, I'm a fan of Chris Irvin. I just really like that guy. He's a good dude. He puts out quality stuff. He's entertaining as hell. I got nothing but love for Y2J. And so thank you, Chris Jericho, for this last run here. It has been very, very fantastic to be a friend of Jericho and cheer you on, man. So thanks to Y2J for sticking around. And here's hoping that we've got plenty of more just awesomeness to come down the line from Chris Jericho. We shall see. We shall see. In some way, shape, form, or fashion, we're going to get some cool stuff. I mean, that's just the way it is. When a guy remains that busy and he puts out such quality in every single facet of his career, no matter what medium it is, be it books or music or whatever the hell, well, you're going to get good stuff regardless. So, hey, I'm looking forward to seeing whatever's next. And I encourage you all to take a moment to not just see this and roll beyond it. You know, this isn't just one of those things where it's like, okay, that's the end of this storyline. Now it's on to whatever is next. And because, of course, we're probably going to get Kevin Owens versus AJ Styles next, and that's going to be awesome. That's going to be a fantastic feud, I am predicting. But before we move on to that, before that is officially a thing, even though they're probably already kickstarting it on Talking Smack this evening, because I believe they're both supposed to be on the show, they're not even going to give us any breathing room, but I encourage you to take a little breathing room for yourself and appreciate the awesomeness that was Chris Jericho over the course of this last run. So, again, thank you, Y2J. It was awesome having you on board, my friend, and just fantastic to watch you work, as always. Hopefully, you guys enjoy this show and think it is fun to listen to and everything. And maybe you enjoyed SmackDown this evening. I didn't think it was all that terrible, but I didn't really think it was all that great. It's time to break that bad boy down. We are going to talk our way through SmackDown in its entirety from top to bottom and break down all the little stuff as we go along. And at the end of this bad boy, we will give it a grade. And that's going to happen here in just a moment, right after we pay a couple bills up in this piece. And you check out this right here. All right, we are back in action here, and it is time to talk about SmackDown Live. We are coming again, like I said, we're coming off of a Raw that was a bit lackluster. I gave it a B minus because the last match was so good and because Dean Ambrose was so entertaining. Last night was weird. I started to give it a C plus, then I gave it a B minus, and I was thinking about going back to a C plus when the show ended, and I have since gone back to a C plus. But it's on document now. It's there recorded for everybody to hear on last night's late shifts. So you know, I guess we're gonna have to roll with the B minus, but it's more of a C plus because last night's show wasn't bad. It just there wasn't any nothing of note happened. It was running in place. It was the exact same thing that you would kind of expect to see with the exception of the fact that Braun and Roman weren't around, so the spotlight was able to be shifted over a little bit to the IC title, which got zero focus going into Payback. Dean Ambrose wasn't even on the damn card. This is a guy who was the world champion on SmackDown for a good stretch of last year, and he wasn't even on the pay-per-view card, you know, in the weeks after coming over to Monday Night Raw. That's got to be a little bit – that's kind of a slap in the face to a degree. Though at the same time, you can tell – I think I could tell last night that it seems to me that they are beginning a shift over there on Raw, at least for the time being. They know that the Universal Championship is not around. They know that Brock Lesnar's not going to be around for the time being, so they need to adjust a little bit, and I think they want to put the focus on the IC title. Now, how long that lasts, I don't know. We know that Brock is wrestling at the, I believe it's the July pay-per-view Great Balls of Fire, which, again, good Lord, what a ridiculous name for a pay-per-view. Oh, goodness gracious. it's going to shake our nerves and it's going to rattle our brains. But Great Balls of Fire is coming our way in July, and it's already been advertised that Brock Lesnar will be defending the Universal Championship at that show. That, as of right now, is more than 2 months away. So we've got 2 months to fill. Couple of pay-per-views over the course of that, and so something's going to need to be special in the mix of it, and that special thing would presumably be the Intercontinental Championship. So that kind of is what it is, and I'm glad that the focus is being shifted over to that. It's only a matter of time before Reigns and Braun come back and take that big bulk of the spotlight again, which, you know, some people are going to be happy about because of the Braun part, other people not going to be happy about because of the Reigns part, but we discussed that last night. The only reason you really like Braun as much as you do is because WWE was smart enough to put him in the ring with Roman Reigns, and you can agree with that or disagree with that. That makes it no less true. My friends, and if you want the breakdown on that, you can listen to last night's Heat Seeker, which was a bit of a heat seeker, frankly. I've heard a few things about that one so far, a couple of emails, messages on Facebook and whatnot, but hey, it is what it is. I stand by it. And the bottom line is that last night's Raw, they were kind of jogging in place, and tonight's SmackDown didn't exactly pick up the pace. We're getting new things, but the new things that they're giving us are not exactly things that we're super-duper hyped and excited about. And part and parcel with that would be Jinder Mahal. Jinder Mahal is a fantastic example of WWE just not quite doing what we want them to. They're doing what we've been asking for, but they're not really doing it. You know what I mean? Because we've been asking for, it seems like wrestling fans are always asking for something new. Give us something new. We're tired of the same old thing over and over and over again. We don't need to see the same dudes in the main event constantly over and over and over again, unless it's AJ Styles, and then please just continue to give us all the AJ Styles you want to give us. But anybody besides him, no. We don't want to see it a whole super-duper bunch. Maybe Kevin Owens, too. But you know what I mean. You know what I mean. So they give us somebody new, and it's Jinder Mahal. And we're like, what? And it's confusing, and they didn't give it any build, which inherently made it kind of dumb, and everybody hated it, and everybody continues to hate it. And I'm going to wager that SmackDown tonight began with Jinder Mahal backstage doing a photo shoot with the WWE Championship, which he, of course, stole from Randy Orton last week. He still has possession of it. He actually knocked Randy Orton out with it last Sunday on Payback, and he still got the belt, so he's doing a photo shoot with it, showing it off and everything. Well, here comes Shane McMahon, and he walks up. He says that titles are earned around here on SmackDown, and how he is going to take that belt and give it back to its rightful owner. Jinder says, well, I'm going to beat Randy Orton at Backlash, and then the title will be mine. Shane tells him to worry about what is happening tonight, that being a match against Sami Zayn. Shane takes the title back, and we cut to the SmackDown opening video. I'm going to tell you right now, people who were tuning in to watch SmackDown this evening, and the first thing they see is Jinder Mahal doing a photo shoot with the WWE Championship, so a lot of them maybe turned the TV off at that point. Well, not a lot, but a fair amount of people probably turned the show off at that given point. And then, if they did stick around, they heard Shane McMahon talking about how Jinder Mahal was going to face Sami Zayn this evening. And it doesn't take a genius to put two and two together and get four. And four, in this instance, equals Sami Zayn plus Jinder Mahal, who is being pushed to the moon right now and is the number one contender for the championship and has two guys watching his back, equals four, which is Sami Zayn's losing. It, just from the moment that was announced, I knew that Jinder Mahal was going to be beating Sami Zayn tonight. And I don't necessarily have a problem with that in execution. I have a problem with the execution of this overall. As we've spoken about before, I've got nothing against Jinder Mahal. I've got nothing against them giving him an opportunity. Some people seem to. They just don't think that he should get an opportunity in general. And if that's your opinion, then fine. You're entitled to that opinion. But I'm fine with this dude getting an opportunity. My issue is with the fact that it was done so suddenly and out of the middle of the blue. The guy was given zero build whatsoever. He just went from being on the job squad to the number one contender all within a week. And it was too much. It's too much too fast. They were going for surprise, and all they wound up doing was pissing people off, myself included in that regard. So I don't mind if a guy is getting a number one contender push and he's trying to prove himself. You put him against a mid-card babyface like Sami Zayn. Yeah, that's what you're supposed to do. to get a guy like Jinder Mahal over when he is heading towards a championship match at Randy Orton. That's exactly what you're supposed to be doing with him. But the fact that Jinder is completely unproven, they haven't been able to get over that hump yet because it's only been like 2 weeks, and Orton has been preoccupied with Bray Wyatt, and, you know, it's just all of these things are coming together to make a perfect storm of suctitude for this Jinder Mahal push. We'll see how it all breaks down at the end of the day, and we'll see how this match against Sami Zayn goes later on in the evening. I'll go ahead and tell you right now, we didn't even see Randy Orton this evening, which is surprising to me. I would have anticipated that Randy Orton would have showed up and maybe beat Jinder's ass or done something, but apparently Randy Orton is just peachy keen and fine with the fact that that Jinder Mahal and his boys ran out there and cost him that House of Horrors match against Bray Wyatt. The guy was able to overcome a fucking Frigidaire being dumped on top of him and being driven through a closet wall and everything, but then Jinder Mahal shows up and hits him in the shoulder with a championship belt, and Randy, he's got to take a night off for that one. So, whatever. But that's how SmackDown began. Then we got the opening video. We are live from Fresno, California, and Shane McMahon opens the official part of the show, making his way down to the ring. He thanks everybody. I assumed that maybe he was going to call out Randy and give him the belt, but Shane didn't have the belt. Instead, what he did was he wanted everybody to join him in welcoming the newest member of SmackDown, that being the new United States Champion, Chris Jericho. Y2J comes down to a great big old pop because, as mentioned, Jericho is one of, if not the most just purely over guys on the entire show. I would say one of at this point because I think AJ has usurped him a little bit ever since KO and Jericho broke up, but that's a debate that we can have elsewhere. Either way, Jericho very popular at this juncture. He makes his way down there and welcomes us to the new Show of Jericho. Shane says there's an entire locker room of guys who want to have a dream match with Jericho. And, man, first we got to get through tonight because Jericho will be defending his championship tonight against Kevin Owens in the main event. But then music interrupts, and out comes AJ Styles. His music informs us all that we do not want any. We do not want any. He knows that we are scared and that we do not really want any. He says that a lot of has changed since he and Chris Jericho were on the same show, back when they were pals, back when they had, you know, Y2AJ going on, and then Jericho turned on him and everything. You know, right now, Jericho, he is standing in the house that AJ Styles built. The whole Y2AJ thing, that is the ancient history, but he remembers it, and he would love the opportunity to take that United States Championship from Jericho at Backlash if Jericho is still champion at the end of the night. Because, of course, AJ Styles, it has already been predetermined as of a couple weeks ago, AJ Styles is the number one contender for the U.S. title, regardless of who is holding it at Backlash. So, Jericho brags about making KO tap out last night. He says he's the new face of America, and he goes to add Styles to the list, you know, because he came out there and interrupted his arrival to his new show, but the music interrupts, and out comes Kevin Owens. He is looking very much like Grumpy Cat. He is not a happy fellow. He says this is the most pathetic thing he's ever seen. Jericho, Styles, and Shane all arguing about things that don't matter there in the ring. Owens says that all that matters is him getting the championship back this evening. The Festival of Friendship and WrestleMania 33 were nothing compared to what he is going to do to Chris Jericho this evening. And then he openly wonders why AJ's even out there. Why are you even here? This doesn't concern you. You need to just get out of my ring. Get the hell out of my ring. Well, AJ obliges. AJ does exactly as asked. He gets out of the ring and proceeds to power walk his way straight to Kevin Owens. They engage in fisticuffs. Turn my headphones up! They are just fisticuffing all over the ramp, beating each other down. Here come officials to break it up. Jericho, meanwhile, is in the ring being like, let them fight. It's awesome. That was a nice little touch there. I love me some Chris Jericho. Shane winds up leaving the ring and trying to break up the fight. We get it kind of broken up and everything, and that's how SmackDown begins. We've got animosity between Jericho and AJ, you know, hinting towards the fact that, okay, if Jericho does hold on to the U.S. title, he's going to be facing AJ. But then it culminates in physical altercation between AJ and Owens, which is the thing that's been building for, like, the last 2 weeks. So it kind of gave us, once again, just the knowledge of that Jericho is doing other stuff this summer, coupled with the fact that they've been building AJ versus Owens for the last 2 weeks, and then you sprinkle some physical action between AJ and Owens tonight before the match even happens, it all adds up to pretty much give you the spoiler that Kevin Owens was winning that belt back this evening. It would have been very cool of them. I think it would have been smart, maybe, of WWE to give us the swerve, to have Jericho pull out the victory this evening over Owens, and then we go to Backlash before we have the big, you know, breaking up and everything. And, well, not the breaking up, you know what I mean. Jericho leaving. Jericho losing and leaving. But Jericho's probably got some other stuff to do between now and then, so, you know, I get it. And this was a bit more impactful, and you want to build up to AJ and KO, and so I get it. I understand it all, but still, that's how we opened the show, and it really gave me, just looking at everything and seeing how things had sussed out and how everything was breaking down, gave me the impression that we didn't have a whole hell of a lot of Chris Jericho left to enjoy. Even though Jericho really kind of came out on the top of all of this, he was the one standing in the ring with the championship, meanwhile everybody else was fighting, so... Anyway, they let us know that still to come this evening, we will have Naomi teaming with Charlotte, which is an odd coupling if there ever was one. They will be taking on Carmella and Natalya. We then see Jinder Mahal walking backstage. He's got the Singh brothers alongside him, and we go to commercial break. When we return, it is revealed that the main event this evening, which of course is Kevin Owens versus Chris Jericho, a stipulation has been added to it, not to the match necessarily, but said stipulation is that AJ Styles has been banned from ringside. You know, because AJ Styles is so good at listening to authority. Why don't you ask Shane McMahon's head about that one? You know, it went through a car window, if you don't recall. But anyways, apparently he's going to obey now because AJ Styles is a good guy. So, yeah, he's banned from ringside for the main event. But we go out to the ring, and it is time for the match we were told was going to happen at the very, very beginning. It's time for Sami Zayn taking on Jinder Mahal. Sami comes out. We see footage from last week on Talking Smack where Baron Corbin beat the sweet bejesus out of him. This led to officials trying to break up the fight, and Corbin pushed an official down, and he immediately looked remorseful about it because he knew that ramifications were coming. Ramifications, of course, did come. Shane McMahon suspended him without pay for a week. So no Baron Corbin this week. He is not around this evening, unfortunately. But Sami still needs things to do, and what he's doing is facing off against Jinder Mahal. Jinder makes his way out second. He's got the Singh brothers alongside him, and we begin this match. And it was pretty okay. I just don't get it from Jinder. Again, I'm all for giving somebody a shot and seeing if they can succeed. I'm usually right about that, though, and I'm not bragging about that. It's just something I've noticed over the years. I can generally look at somebody and see them go for a little bit, and then I can generally tell when somebody has got what it takes to be a top guy. The only time I've ever just been straight up wrong, flat out wrong, was JBL. I never thought that Bradshaw had what it took. And then when the JBL character came out, I thought that it was stupid and that they were just trying to force something. They, you know, they liked Bradshaw and he, you know, oh, he had the mainstream success and he was on like CNBC and whatnot or Fox News or whatever the hell doing the financial thing. They were just trying to push him because of that. I didn't think it was going to work. And I was very, very, very proven wrong. JBL flipped into another gear that I didn't know that he had. And so I was blatantly proven wrong in that scenario. But the overwhelming majority of the time, I can tell whether or not somebody's going to succeed. You know, there are guys that I want to succeed, but that I just don't see it in. Guys like Cesaro. I don't think that Cesaro's ever going to be a major success. I could see him getting kind of this is going to sound bad, but kind of a pity run at some point, kind of a lifetime achievement championship run, very similar to Chris Benoit. Chris Benoit was never exactly a sparkling, you know, tower of charisma and awesomeness, but damn was he good in the ring, and I think that he got the belt at WrestleMania 20 as kind of a pat-on-the-back lifetime achievement thing. It was never intended to be some long time. He wasn't going to have the belt for a year or nothing like that, and I could see potentially maybe the same thing happening down the road for Cesaro, but I just don't see it necessarily happening for him. The same here goes for Jinder Mahal, to bring it back full circle. I just don't see it in Jinder Mahal. I don't think that he quite has what it takes. I think that he could get heat, but I think that in order to really get him the kind of heat that they want to get him, they're going to have to resort to cheap heat, which would be him speaking a different language and getting the, you know, jingoistic Americans to boo the brown man, which is basically what they went for last week. He started out coming out there. We discussed it at length last week on The Late Shift. He came out talking about how he's richer, smarter, and blah, 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 and all this good stuff, and that would have been fine. But then it devolved into him talking about how he's going to take the belt for his people, and he started speaking Hindi. I believe it was Hindi. I might be wrong about that, so apologies if I am wrong about that, because I just don't know other languages, frankly. I know a little bit of Spanish. I could ask you where the bathroom is in your library. ¿Dónde está baño en la biblioteca? I can knock that one out. That's my favorite sentence in Spanish. ¿Dónde está baño en la biblioteca? Love that sentence. But I digress. I don't speak Hindi. So I think that is what Jinder was speaking last week. But either way, what it really was just cheap heat. It was just, you know, if somebody comes out and speaks a different language, it is automatically the cue for the people in the crowd to boo them. It is just ingrained in wrestling fans. It's ugly and nasty and messed up and gross at this point in history. And it should be something that isn't used anymore. That is something that we should never use ever, ever again. But unfortunately, that's not the case. They're going to keep on using it. They did it with Rusev. They're doing it with Jinder. That it just is what it is. And I guess, you know, we're just going to have to deal with it. It seems irresponsible in today's environment, but maybe they're just going to have to learn that the hard way. Some sort of backlash or something potentially could be around the bend, and I don't just mean the pay-per-view. We could have backlash over backlash, I suppose, here. But either way, Jinder just doesn't have it, and he doesn't really have it in the ring either. He is serviceable. He's fine. He had a pretty good match against Sami Zayn, but he seems very robotic. He is just kind of waiting for the next thing to happen. He tends to go into the move and preparing for the move like a split second before he needs to. It doesn't look fluid. He makes it look like it's scripted. Now, if you go back and watch this evening, then that's exactly what I took from it. Jinder Mahal makes matches look like they're scripted. He is reaching for Sami Zayn to do like a, you know, when Sami's coming off the ropes, he's already kind of bending over and reaching for around the waist to transition into the next reversal thing that they're about to do. It's just a little too on the nose. He's not bad. He's a talented guy. And I do think that with some work they could get him over, and I would love for them to prove me wrong. I would love for him to be the next JBL that just straight up proves me wrong, and as soon as he gets a little confidence underneath him, he takes it to the next level and is a raging badass of a super badass heat getting heel, you know? I would love that. I would love that. I just don't see it happening, especially after this match against Sami. A lot of people pissed off over this match against Sami. I got a tweet from our pal Mondarius J. Freeman at MJFR33MAN, MJ Freeman, but the E's are threes. And he said, a week late, but still called people complaining about Sami being zaried. Sami being zaried, yes, Sami being buried. And yeah, I did call that. I knew when he went over to SmackDown, of course, he's not going to win every match. He's going to keep on doing what he's doing. I do think that he has a better opportunity over there on SmackDown to slowly build his way up the card. And I think that, yeah, they really are. There's just a lot of opportunity over there. But that having been said, it's not like it was just going to automatically be the thing that they did. Maybe they should have gone with Sami instead of Jinder. That seems to be the thing. A lot of people wanted them to go with Sami and make Sami the number one contender to go up against Randy Orton, as opposed to just hotshotting Jinder into the role. And you know what? I can't argue that. I think that would have been a fantastic way to go. It kind of would have been babyface versus babyface, and I think they're still really trying to push Randy as a babyface at this point, so that might not have been the smartest thing to do, but it wouldn't hurt my feelers a whole hell of a lot. But instead, what we get is Sami Zayn is the underdog working, you know, from underneath, which is exactly what he's supposed to be. He's the underdog from the underground, and that is just the way that it is for right now. So he faces off against Jinder and winds up. Sami is running the ropes for a dive, but Samir Singh grabs his ankle as he is bouncing off the ropes. He turns around to face him, and that causes Jinder to come up behind. He gets him in the Cobra Clutch, turns it into the slam that he does, and Sami is down and out. We get the one, we get the two, we get the three. Your winner of this match is Jinder Mahal, the Maharaja up in this joint. And I'll tell you what, I like that. I love it. When he puts that stank on, when he gets that sneer on his face, when he calls himself the Maharaja, that is some shit right there. I could get behind that Jinder Mahal. The problem is that the sparks I am seeing from him are only sparks. They have not yet lit a flame. And again, I'm cautiously optimistic that that could happen. But the more I am seeing this, the more the weeks go on and we get more and more of seeing what's going on here, and especially with the match tonight against Sami, who can work against anybody, It leads me more to believe that we're not going to get a great match out of Jinder Mahal and Randy Orton at Backlash. Randy Orton, not exactly known for having great matches against, you know, kind of by-the-numbers guys. Randy Orton is only as good as who he is in the ring with. So if he's in the ring with a paint-by-numbers guy, Randy Orton's going to be paint-by-numbers. You know, Randy Orton is a fantastic athlete, and he's a natural professional wrestler, but he is not a guy who can have a great match against a not-great opponent, like others. You know, so... That's just kind of the way that it is. I don't think this is going to be a great match, and I don't think it's going to do any favors for Jinder Mahal. But we will see. We will see whether or not Randy is able to hinder Jinder. But this evening, nothing was hindering Jinder because he got the victory with the help of the Singh brothers. They are a great addition to him. I think that if anything is going to help him get over and put him in the position he needs to be in, it's going to be the help of those dudes. That is definitely going to be the key to this entire thing. But if he could just say everything, if he could just spit out all of his words, if he could do every promo with the vim and the vigor and the stank and the just disdain of when he calls himself the Maharaja, because that just rolls off the tongue, you know, that's just a badass word. So, I mean, if he could do everything like that, then we would have something on our hands. But he doesn't. He doesn't. He doesn't even call Randy Orton Randy Orton. He calls him Randy Orton, which sounds like he's a robot. Orton, I am coming for you. The Maharaja is on his way to fight you, Randy Orton. It don't sound right. It don't sound right, but... We'll see how it breaks down. We got a couple more weeks for this guy to try to get built up and be badass, and I'm going to give him the opportunity. Like I said, I'm giving him the chance. I'm giving him through Backlash, and if by Backlash, by the evening of Backlash, I have not been convinced, then sorry, I tried. You know what I mean? I tried. Anyways, we didn't go backstage. Natalya, Carmella, Ellsworth, and Tamina are approaching Becky Lynch. Before we get to that, it does deserve mentioning. Yes, people, I'm sure, are... I know I saw some people on Twitter saying that Sammy has no business losing to this guy, blah, 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 blah. But Sammy is the perfect guy to lose to this dude. Again, I don't have any problem with that. I do wish that Sammy was in the position that Jinder is in instead of Jinder, but... It is the way that it is. Reality is exactly what it is. We already know that Jinder Mahal is the number one contender. That's not going to change coming up on Backlash. So as long as that is the reality of the situation, I'm fine with him beating a guy like Sami Zayn to try to pick up some heat, because Sami Zayn is exactly the guy that he should be beating to pick up some heat. He's a popular mid-card guy who can have good matches with people. That's exactly what you want. You know, that's exactly what you want. If it was a year ago, then it'd be Dolph Ziggler. Before he turned heel, Jinder Mahal would have been beating Dolph Ziggler this evening. You know, same kind of thing. Dude who's popular with the crowd, works well, and, you know, just that's the way it goes. Sami Zayn is good at losing to people. That's why he's the underdog. So I don't have a problem with him losing to Jinder this evening. The match just wasn't all that great. But anywho, it wasn't bad, but it wasn't all that great. Like I said, we have all those folks backstage, you know, Natalya, Carmella, Ellsworth, Tamina. They are talking to Becky Lynch. They're trying to talk her into siding against Charlotte because they're like, hey, you know, I mean, you were the first SmackDown Women's Champion. Nobody's looking out for you. Charlotte comes in and immediately gets a title shot. And we just figure, you know, I know we're not all friends and we're an odd pairing and all that, but the bottom line is we would be able to look out for you. If you want an opportunity, you should be able to get the opportunity, and you're going to have to fight for it. We're here fighting for it. We want to take out Charlotte. We want to help fight and get our spot that we deserve. And Becky Lynch, you should be a part of that. She says, well, you know, I never really thought of it that way. Let me think about it and I'll get back to you. They walk off and it looks like Becky is doing some pondering. We then see Ty Dillinger backstage. He is walking, presumably towards the ring, as we go to commercial. When we return, we get a Shinsuke Nakamura Backlash promo. For anybody who was wondering whether or not Shinsuke is going to get a push, and I saw one guy during the pay-per-view a couple nights ago, I saw a tweet come across my timeline where it was like, WWE, you don't need to convince us that Shinsuke is awesome. You need to figure it out for yourself. Well, when they're building a fucking pay-per-view around a guy, it would seem to indicate to me that WWE knows that he's pretty neato. At this point, you know what I mean? It seems to me that WWE is aware of the fact that Shinsuke Nakamura is kind of badass because they are building Backlash around him. They are completely every Backlash commercial. They're not talking about Randy Orton and Jinder Mahal. They're not talking about AJ Styles getting his U.S. title shot. No. All that it is Shinsuke Nakamura. It's going to be the first match of Shinsuke Nakamura. Hey, check it out, Shinsuke Nakamura. By the way, did you hear? Shinsuke Nakamura. That's the entirety of the Backlash hype. So if you are still on that train that WWE doesn't know what the hell they're doing with Shinsuke Nakamura, please do me a favor and shut the hell up, because that's just not true. It's just not true. Now if a couple, now if he loses to Dolph Ziggler and then goes on a losing skid and he sucks and Shinsuke Nakamura is not presented as anything special for the rest of the year, okay, then I'll listen to you. But for now, he's obviously being presented as something special. Jesus, they're calling him the artist known as Shinsuke Nakamura. He's not even a wrestler. He's not an athlete. He's not a superstar. He's the artist. That's Prince-level shit right there, guys. Anyways, they show that Backlash promo, and Dolph Ziggler is backstage watching it with some random dudes. He can't believe Nakamura's getting the push he's getting, and he isn't even here tonight. You know, he keeps referring to Nakamura, not as Nakamura, but as this guy. Shane McMahon shows up, and he's like, actually, this guy's name is Shinsuke Nakamura. And, you know, I know you guys had some interaction last week. Well, guess what? You get to face him at Backlash, but tonight you are going to be facing Sin Cara. And so that's what we're going to get later, Dolph Ziggler and Sin Cara. But before that, we go out to the ring. Aiden English is in there. He calls for a spotlight, and he sings about being the drama king. But he gets cut off because Ty Dillinger makes his way out there. Everybody's happy to see him because 10 to 10, 10, 10, 10, 10. This goes exactly as you would anticipate. Ty basically gets the quick victory here. It wasn't a super quick. It wasn't like a squash match within 30 seconds, but it wasn't too far off. Ty keeps control for the majority of the match. He drops English over his knee. He gets the uno, the dos, e, the trace. Your winner of this match is Ty Dillinger. And afterwards, he makes his exit doing the whole 10-10-10 thing. Aiden English is in the ring throwing a fit. And that's the way that it goes. Still to come, though. The United States Championship will be on the line. We go to commercial. When we return, Chris Jericho is backstage talking to Renee Young. He calls her Ronnie, I believe. Aiden English walks by, though, while they're talking, and Aiden is crying. Jericho's like, what are you doing? There's no crying in wrestling or baseball. There's no crying in wrestling. What's the deal? I mean, come on. It's not that bad, is it? You're on SmackDown. You're a good-looking guy. You've got a cool, hairy chest. Life is good, man. Life is good. But you were crying, and man, you know what happens when you walk up to me crying? Aiden English, you just made the list. At least he knew his name. You know, I was fully expecting him to call him something different, like Agent Spanish or something. I mean, that would have been the perfect thing. But no, Jericho actually knew the man's name, and he added him to the list, and then he added Ronnie to the list as well. Renee is completely like, oh, what did I do? And meanwhile, Aiden English is yet again in tears because of the fact that he was just added to the list. Jericho, for his part, just pimps away because Jericho. We get a look back at last week and how the show ended. We had ourselves, of course, a women's championship match last week. It was indeed Charlotte taking on the women's champion, Naomi. And that ended with Carmella, Natalya, and Tamina coming out there and attacking both of them. So that has led to this bizarre kind of pairing between them. And I was talking last week, oh, it looks like maybe we're going to get a bit of a Charlotte turn here. Because, I mean, it's basically everybody against Charlotte, and Naomi got caught in the crossfire. It's, you know, Becky is kind of floating around in the midst of everything out there. And they didn't incorporate her last week, but this week maybe they're kind of going to. But either way, kind of looking like Charlotte is being set for a little bit of a face turn, which would at least be fresh for her. Either way, Dasha is backstage talking to Charlotte. Charlotte says that the so-called welcoming committee just delayed the inevitable last week. She says that the SmackDown Women's title is her destiny, even if she and Naomi are tag-teaming this evening. Carmella approaches at this point. That distracts her because Natalya and Tamina come up from behind. Charlotte sees what's about to happen, you know, right before it does, and she tries to strike first with a back elbow, but it doesn't work out for her. It's 3-on-1. They beat her downtown to Chinatown like Buster Brown, throw her into some production cases. They're kind of slapping her around and taunting her and making fun of her and stuff. They get up in her face. Tamina welcomes her to SmackDown, and Natalya says, we'll see you out there later tonight. They walk away, and later tonight is, well, right now, right about now. Funk Soul Brother, check it out now, Funk Soul Brother, because we're going out to the ring, and we get the entrance of the women's champion, Naomi. We go to commercial break as Naomi dances around. Again, I'm firmly of the opinion that Naomi's gimmick is Fly Girl. So she's Fly Girl. That's exactly what they used to do on In Living Color. The Fly Girls would come out and dance as we went to commercial break. So Naomi, she's not really going against my edict of her being a Fly Girl that I made last week. I mean, she's kind of supporting that claim at this point. But hey, she's a badass fly girl. She's super fly, if you will. But she's dancing. We go to commercial. When we return, it's looking like we have ourselves a handicap match because Natalya and Carmella come out. Tamina and James Ellsworth are in the corner. Naomi's talking with the referee, and you know it's looking like Charlotte can't go. So Naomi kind of has to agree to this, and of course she's prideful, so she does. And we have the match here. It is Naomi against Carmella and Natalya. And again, we've got Ellsworth, the big hog, and Tamina outside the ring. So things ain't looking good for Naomi. No matter how super fly she is, she ain't going to be able to dance her way out of a 4-on-1 ass whooping. You know what I mean? Carmella starts off, and she's talking some smack. They go back and forth, and that's kind of how this goes. Naomi trying to get some licks in, and she does here and there. You know, she's doing some athletic stuff and getting in her shots, but eventually the numbers game just really kind of takes control. We go to commercial break. Before we went to commercial break, we have Naomi being beat down. She's getting beat up pretty good here. Carmella is able to drop her on her head. She mounts Naomi. She's nailing her with some strikes. She nails some more offense, goes for a two count, but it doesn't work out for her. Goes for a three count, but it doesn't work out for her. It's only a two count. Natalya comes back in. She's beating Naomi down into the corner. They're keeping control, but then all of a sudden the music hits, and out comes Charlotte. She is limping her way to ringside, but she is making her way out there. She gets up on the ring apron, awaiting for the opportunity to get a hot tag, and damn does Naomi need it. She finally is able to fight her way over there. She gets herself a tag, and she makes her way in to unload on Natalya. She nails a big boot, a neck breaker and everything. She stands tall. The crowd loving it. I was kind of surprised by that. The crowd just completely and totally behind Charlotte. So anybody who is in that camp right now that is saying that Charlotte's not over or whatever, and anybody who was saying that a Charlotte face turn wouldn't work, well, you were proven wrong, at least this evening, because the crowd seemed completely and totally cool with cheering for Charlotte. But then again, anybody who comes out there and chops and says woo and whatnot, the crowd tends to get behind them. Charlotte goes for the figure four, but Carmella runs in there. We get a little bit more back and forth of this with Charlotte trying to maintain control here, but it doesn't work out for her. She is getting beat down a little bit by Natalya as we go to commercial break. When we return, Charlotte is still being beat down, this time by Carmella. It goes back and forth a little bit here. Natalya gets knocked off of the apron. Naomi winds up coming in, and she hits a big jawbreaker on Carmella, nails the rear view on Carmella, but Natalya has the referee distracted, so we can't get the three count. Naomi winds up coming over there, kicking Natalya off of the ring apron with a big kick. About this time, the big hog makes his a presence known. He jumps up on the apron, providing a bit of a distraction. That allows Carmella to roll Naomi up. She grabs a handful of tights, and we get the one, the two, and the three. Your winners of this match are Carmella and Natalya. And afterwards, Naomi, she is trying to fight them off. She's pissed over what just happened here. They just cheated to get the victory over her. She's brawling with Carmella. Natalya and Tamina come into the ring, and they are beating her down a little bit. They're beating down. They turn their attention to Charlotte, and they're beating her down. Carmella is taking Naomi into the corner, and it's just a good old-fashioned passionate ass-whooping here until the music hits, and out comes Becky Lynch. She makes her way down there. By the way, they kept on calling this group of people the Welcoming Committee. Okay, I get it, but they didn't have to say it a jabillion times. Hopefully that's not just like what they're going to call themselves. That would suck. But maybe that is what they're going to go with here. Either way, the Welcoming Committee was just standing there waiting for her to get in the ring because nobody knows exactly what Becky's going to do. They had that conversation earlier. Is Becky going to decide to side with them and, you know, force her way into the Women's Championship opportunity that Charlotte has taken away from her or stood in the way of based upon what they've said to her? Or is she going to side with those who are kind of, you know, against the odds here? Is she going to do what's right? Is she going to do what's right? Or is she going to follow her championship aspirations and join up with the bad guys? Well, this is Becky Lynch we're talking about here, so you already know how this is going. But just for the sake of speaking about it, Becky gets into the ring. She faces them all. She winds up shaking Tamina's hand. The fans are booing this. She shakes Carmella's hand. She shakes Natalya's hand, gives Natalya a hug. Ellsworth then sticks his hand out there, and Becky says no, but then she opens her arm. She wants to give the big hog a hug. She just wants to grab a hold of the big hog. And who doesn't, really? But when she gets her hands on him, she shoves Ellsworth into Tamina and starts brawling. Becky stomps on Carmella and all that stuff, but she turns around straight into a super kick from Tamina. Carmella winds up tossing Naomi out to the floor before she can try to help, and Natalya holds Becky while Tamina is pounding on her. Charlotte also gets tossed out of the ring, and Natalya holds Becky while Carmella decks her this time. So they're basically just taking turns whooping Becky Lynch's ass, and that's kind of the way that this all ends. Carmella's music plays, the fans are booing, and the bad guys, the welcoming committee, are standing tall as all these other ladies are laid out. So it's looking like we're going to wind up with, as I think just about Ray Charles could have seen that we were coming to this yet, and Ray Charles is blind and dead. But we got Carmella, Natalya, and Tamina, and they will be taking on Charlotte and Naomi and Becky here before too terribly long. One side of that tag team, of this feud, one side is a little bit more talent heavy than the other one. I won't say which one though, because like Becky Lynch, I want to be nice. Anywho, it's the good guys. It's the good guys. Anywho, moving forward here, they hype up the fact that Jericho versus Owens is coming our way, and we go back to commercial. When we return from the break, we've got a promo for the New Day. They will be coming to SmackDown soon. Again, presumably they are either waiting until Kofi is able to do some stuff, like maybe hang out outside the ring, or maybe they're just going to full on wait until he is healthy and can compete in the ring. Either way, we got a few weeks probably until we're going to be seeing the New Day show up, but they'll be here before too terribly long. Maybe they'll show up at Backlash or something. That'd be kind of a cool surprise. But now it's time to go to the ring. A match that we were told about earlier, Dolph Ziggler still riding his hate buzz and being all pissed off about Shinsuke Nakamura, or that guy, if you will. He is facing off this evening against Sin Cara. Sin Cara has new gear. He kind of looks like a Power Ranger. I don't know how to exactly describe this. It was, imagine if there was a lowrider transformer that has all like angel wings and all the cool crosses, and you know how lowriders are painted, they're badass. But imagine that instead of being a transformer, it was a car that turned into a human. There was actually a Michael Jackson movie pitched like that years and years and years ago. You should look that up, but I digress. So basically, a lowrider turned into a man who happens to resemble a Power Ranger, and that man is Sin Cara. And it kind of glows in the dark and stuff. I like his new gear. I think it's pretty cool. I think it's neat that both he and Kalisto have got new gear going in their favor. Kalisto's is cooler because that mask, as we spoke about previously on some previous shows, that's Tom Savini mask, man. They don't get a whole hell of a lot better than that. That's a badass mask. But Sin Cara, looking cool. Doesn't matter, though, because he's still fucking Sin Cara. And I mean, none but love for some Sin Cara, but the bottom line is that the ship has sailed at this point, my friends. When they put Sin Cara, they said he was in the cruiserweight division, and I think he had maybe two matches in the cruiserweight division, and then we never saw the guy again. That maybe the writing was on the wall there. Then they wind up switching him over, and now he's back on SmackDown, so he can't even be in the cruiserweight division. From the looks of him, he wouldn't be making weight for the cruiserweights anyways. It's just, I don't know. Things ain't looking all that great for Sin Cara. But his outfit is on point. He's looking badass. He looks very, very like a lowrider Power Ranger just out there doing work in his glow-in-the-dark gear. Dolph Ziggler, of course, is out next, and he takes control pretty early on. Cara is trying to make a comeback with his athleticism and whatnot, hitting some moonsaults and stuff, but it winds up really not working out for him all that great. It was a relatively competitive match, you know, for as long as it lasted. But Ziggler has kind of got that aggression going on, and I like it a lot better when Dolph Ziggler is on the offense more so than the defense, as we've spoken about for the entirety of the run of the Late Shift. And the 3.5 years I've been doing this, I've been having the same complaint about Dolph Ziggler. And he's overcoming it here, of course, because he's kind of working heel. So, he's doing some badass stuff here. He goes for the Famesser, or actually, screw that. I have always hated that, and I'm going to go back to calling it. Ziggler goes for the Rocker Dropper, but Sin Cara is able to counter. He plants Ziggler with a big one-arm slam. He gets a two-count off of that one. Cara is getting a little bit of a lucha, lucha, lucha chant going, a very little one. He goes for a Lion Salt. They made sure to basically – they were trying to – a springboard moonsault, which is technically what it is, but – it was a Lion Salt. He needs to not be gimmick infringing here. Maybe that's why you can't get a damn victory, Sin Cara, because you're trying to steal other folks' shit. Especially when the guy is in the main event right after you. Come on, man. Anyways, he goes for basically a lion salt, but Ziggler gets the knees up. He then winds up connecting with a super kick right upside the side of the face. He gets the one. He gets the two. He gets the three. Your winner of this match is Dolph Ziggler. Afterwards, he is very, very fired up and talking smack, and he gets up on the corner, and he's talking smack to the fans, and he's posing real big and everything. Dolph Ziggler really feeling his oats right now, and I hope he enjoys it, because anybody who entertains even the smallest of notions that Dolph Ziggler has a prayer of beating Shinsuke Nakamura at Backlash, well, get with me. I've got a bridge I'd like to sell you in New York City. Yeah, pardon me. Still to come, Owens versus Jericho as we go back to commercial. When we return, we get yet another teaser debut for Lana and her new lap dancing character. We go backstage, and it's Noam Dar, and he's doing a promo to hype tonight's 205 Live. He says he's going to be facing Rich Swann, and he said that he's going to give Rich Swann a face, a surprise. He's going to give Rich Swann a surprise right in his face, which just sounds icky, especially coming from Noam Dar. Noam Dar is one of the creepiest dudes I have ever seen in my life. He is just a creepy fellow, and he's got a new hairstyle, and he's got kind of like bangs down over his forehead. Just a creepy, creepy dude. Like, if I had kids and I saw Noam Dar walking towards me on the sidewalk, we would cross the street. He drives a panel van. I'm telling you guys, this dude drives a mid-1980s model Chevy van with no windows, and he's got like an old inflatable mattress in the back. I swear to you, that's what Noam Dar drives. And hell, he's probably having to get him rental. So can you imagine Noam Dar has to go to the rental counter and be like, pardon me, do you happen to have a 1980s model Chevy van with an inflatable rubber? Oh, Mr. The Noam Dar special? Sure, we've got it here waiting for you. And the Enterprise gives him the van, and he goes out to try to lure small children and impressionable young women into his van, like Alicia Parks. So, yeah, Noam Dar's a creeper. We go from that, though, to something way more awesome, way more awesome. It looks like the intro to Law & Order. It's the Fashion Files. The Fashion Files. Only instead of the boom, boom, we get wee-oo-wee. It's literally that. Wee-oo-wee. And we see Tyler Breeze. He is sitting at a typewriter, very slowly typing stuff out. He's obviously not so much with the typing. They are in, of course, like what appears to be a police setting. And they're basically talking about fashion police type stuff. They come together to basically come to the conclusion that the Usos are major violators. Their fashion is so bad that it made Fandango physically ill. So that is, you know, a fashion violation with intent to injure, you know? So, man, the Usos are public enemies number one, and the sting is going down. The raid will be going down on the Usos at Backlash. And it was very, very entertaining. It's one of those things that I didn't delete it off the DVR because I'm going to go back and pause it just so I can look at all the Easter eggs that were in the back. There was that famous picture of Vince McMahon, his mugshot that they sold on a T-shirt. They might still do it, but there was that. There were all these various pictures of dudes on the wall, like saying that they were fashion victims and this. Now I saw Hulk Hogan. I think I saw the Legion of Doom, and just like, you know, it looked pretty funny. There was a lot of random stuff going on there that I'm going to want to pause and really check out later. But it was great. It was great. The Fashion Files here, that was wonderful. If they want to keep on doing that for the next couple of weeks, I am down. And if they want to give Tyler Breeze and Fandango a run, if we get Breezango as the tag team champions beating the Usos, you're going to hear one happy son of a bitch on the Aftershock for that show. I'm telling you right now, because, man, that's awesome, guys. That's just – those guys deserve it. Tyler does, at the very least. Tyler Breeze is one of the most talented guys on that entire roster. And I know that I've said many a time that, you know, when he first appeared on the main roster and people were complaining because he wasn't getting a shot, I'm the one who was telling everybody, well, come on, guys, judge it, you know. You have to take into consideration what he was doing in NXT. This is the guy who lost everybody in NXT. He would win a few matches and maybe get like he's got a title shot and he would lose. Or, he's going to win a couple of matches, then he gets a shot against the legendary Jushin Thunder Liger, his first ever match under the WWE umbrella. Tyler Breeze loses. You know, and just that was Tyler Breeze's thing. He would build up to a big match and then he would lose in the clutch. That was Tyler Breeze. He's the jobber to the stars. And that's a valuable role to fill. It's just unfortunate because Tyler's really, really funny, and he's got a great gimmick going for him. I love me some Tyler Breeze, man. Love me some Tyler Breeze. And he's actually made me like Fandango. So, yeah, none but love for Breezango. I hope that they win the tag team titles. I really do. I know a lot of people are probably not going to be very happy with that if it does happen. But you know what? Screw them. Go Breezango. I am team Breezango all the damn way. It ain't like it's going to hurt the Usos to lose, damn it. They're going to get it back eventually. They're the freaking Usos. They can't go more than like 8 months without holding the championships or whatever the hell. But anyways, yeah. Yay for Breeze and Fandango. That was a great little segment there. I hope they do more over the course of the next couple of weeks. But then we go out to the ring. It is time for our main event of the evening. The WWE United States Champion Chris Jericho is making his way out to the ring with his cool blinky scarf. Kevin Owens makes his way out afterwards. He's still got all the Face of America stuff going for him. He's actually announced as the Face of America when it comes time for that. We are reminded of the fact that AJ Styles has been banned from ringside, and we go to commercial break before the match begins. When we return, formal ring introductions, bell rings, they immediately go at it. They go right at each other. Owens is unloading on him, but Jericho is able to get the dropkick to get his way out of it. Owens goes down to the floor for a breather, as per usual, and Jericho follows him out. He is focusing in on the injured hand from Payback, and, you know, it's a smart thing to do, because, hell, it worked out for him pretty damn good a couple nights ago. They bring it back into the ring. Owens is turning things around, trying to get one over on Jericho. He works him over a good little beat. He's got a boot on his neck, and the referee is counting because you're not supposed to do that. The fans are chanting stupid idiot at Kevin Owens. He winds up hitting a big senton for a two count, and he is chopping down Jericho in the corner time and time again. He hits a big drop kick, and he's talking some smack. Jericho takes it into the corner himself, but he misses the big dive or splash or kick or whatever he was going for when Owens moves out of the way. Jericho tumbles over the top rope, winds up landing on the floor. Owens follows him outside, nails a cannonball into the barrier, which squished Jericho real nice. He brings it back into the ring, tries to get a three count off of that, but it is not successful. He only gets a two as we go to commercial break. When we return, just like always, the heel is in control. Chris Jericho is beating down Chris Jericho, throws him onto the apron, pardon me. Jericho tries to go up to the top, you know, kind of make something out of nothing, be a little sudden here, but Owens is able to catch him on the way down with a shot to the gut. He goes for the pop-up powerbomb. Jericho able to weasel his way out of that one. He drops Owens himself. Owens blocks a lion salt with his knees, like just what happened. That's exactly what happened to Sin Cara a few minutes ago. He went for the lion salt, and he got blocked with his knees. It sure would be awesome if there weren't random jobber mid-card guys stealing moves from the main event, wouldn't it? It would. Owens misses a big corner cannonball after that, and Jericho is able to nail the lion salt successfully this time around for a two count. He goes for the walls of Jericho, but Owens is able to block his way out of that. Jericho, undeterred, goes for it yet again, and this time it is locked in firm. He has got it locked down in there, and Owens' hand is all hurt and whatnot from the other kick, and I mean from the other night, and he's got him in the middle of the ring, but Owens is able to power his way over to the ropes and grab it with his uninjured hand, and he winds up hitting a super kick on Jericho as he makes it to his feet. He gets a two count off of that one. The fans are chanting, "This is awesome," as they come face to face yet again. And Owens goes for yet another pop-up powerbomb. Jericho able to get out of that one yet again. Goes for the walls one more time and gets it locked in yet again in the middle of the ring. And Owens finally is able to make it to the bottom rope yet again. They wind up out there on the floor. Owens goes for another super kick, and it doesn't work out for him. Jericho, though, winds up hitting the concrete off of a DDT. Owens kind of dragged him over to where, like, the ramp meets the padding area. There's one area where there's, like, carpet, and he DDT'd him on that, and Jericho was rocked from that point forward. He wasn't really able to do a whole hell of a lot. He seemed kind of concussed and stuff. Not in real life, but you know what I mean. He's selling kind of a concussion is what he's going for, I believe. Owens brings it back into the ring. He's kind of slow to make it back in there himself. He nails yet another super kick. Only gets a two count. Jericho kicking out on instinct. He talks some smack as he picks Jericho up. Jericho takes advantage of the distraction of him talking smack, rolls him up for a two count. Owens is pissed now, so he hits him, throws him into the ropes, nails the pop-up powerbomb, gets the one, gets the two, gets the three. Your winner of this match, and once again, the United States champion, Kevin Owens. And afterwards, he goes to leave. He's got his belt. He goes to leave. But he thinks back, and man, he's not done with Y2J. He sees the officials and paramedics coming out there. They're checking on Jericho because, again, he's kind of acting concussed after he took that DDT on the concrete. Owens ain't going to be having that. He sees him down, blood in the water. Here comes the shark. Owens makes his way back into the ring, and as mentioned at the top of the show, he nailed him with another pop-up powerbomb. He picks him up, yells at him, says, "You were never my best friend," and all that stuff. He goes to throw him into the ropes again, but Jericho can't even support his own weight. He collapses before he's able to even bounce off of the ropes. Owens seems bemused by this. He raises his title up in the middle of the ring, and then he kind of goes to leave. The referees are back out there, and they're helping Jericho up. Then, you know, they pull him out of the ring, and he's got his arms around him. They're trying to help him walk to the back. He's all jacked up and seems very, very confused and doesn't know where he's going. And here comes the new United States champion one more again. Yeah, Kevin Owens is back. He knocks Jericho down. He wraps a steel chair around his head and neck area, rams it into the ring post. And Jericho is down. He is screaming and making gurgly sounds and unpleasant noises as he is down and out. And Kevin Owens is celebrating his epic victory here and once again being the face of America. So, yeah, that's the way that we end things here. It looks like Jericho is hurt. He's not, you know, not hurt, but injured. There's a difference between being hurt and being injured. He went from hurt to injured this evening over the course of the beating that Kevin Owens laid upon him. He just wouldn't quit, and he wouldn't quit, and he wouldn't quit. He won fairly clean, I would say. He did, you know, have to capitalize on DDTing him outside, but that's not necessarily illegal. So Kevin Owens did win clean. So he got the bonus of pinning Chris Jericho clean in the middle of the ring, and then he took him out. So again, I say that Kevin Owens came out on top of this whole thing because even though he lost at the pay-per-view, which a lot of people weren't very happy about, he wound up getting a much bigger victory, in my opinion, tonight on SmackDown. And that's where we leave things. SmackDown is done. I'm sure some cool stuff happened on Talking Smack, and I thank you for listening to this if you're listening live instead of watching that. I'm going to go watch it when we're done here, as I presume many of you will, and we'll see where it goes from there. But how was this episode of SmackDown? We will give it a grade here in just a moment, but first I invite you to check this stuff out right here. Hola, listener Lynn. If you're looking for the best in pro wrestling podcasts, look no further than Lords of Pain Radio. We kick off our week on Mondays as The Late Shift with Stephen Bell recaps and grades Raw shortly after the show goes off the air. Tuesday brings you a look at everything outside of the mainstream as Ms. Finn and Jeff hit you with Global Revolution. Wednesday brings your audio prescription for all things wrestling with The Doc on The Doc Says. And Thursdays are as good as you can get with Burn and Imp and the Perfect 10 Wrestling Podcast. Fridays wrap up the work week with the long-running and always great View from the Right Side of the Pond. And Saturdays take a look back at the rise and fall of World Championship Wrestling on WCW The Legacy Series. That's not all, as Sundays bring you our LOP Radio Aftershock recap shows after every WWE pay-per-view, as well as a multitude of special edition programs over the course of the year. With that sort of lineup, you can't go wrong. So subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher, whatever your preferred podcasting resource, and be sure to pass along a 5-star review if you like what you hear. Because it's all about the fans' voice, your voice, right here on Lords of Pain Radio. And we're back! Yeah, we are back again here on The Late Shift, and it is time to kind of break down and grade this episode of SmackDown. Very similar to last night, as I've mentioned a couple of times, in my opinion. It was kind of paint by numbers. Nothing of note really happened this evening, with the exception of what went down in the main event. There were some things that did kind of push the ball towards what we're going to be getting in the future, but there was nothing that was really just like, oh man, that was some pivotal stuff going on there. You know what I mean? But before we get to the grade and everything, I do want to encourage you guys to go back a couple of days ago, look at the archives here on LOP Radio, and find your way to the payback edition of LOP Radio's Aftershock. Damn it, that's what I'm trying to say. Aftershock for payback. Listen to that. House of Horrors. It was very fun. I had a very good time talking about that very bizarre match, and everybody who has contacted me has said that they had fun listening to it, so you should make your way in that direction just this last Friday, Aftershock for Payback. And, of course, I would encourage you to listen to last night's edition of The Late Shift as we covered Monday Night Raw. Coming up this Sunday here on LOP Radio, we have a bit of a special. Our pal Zanman, Columns Hall of Famer, and, of course, the LOP Radio kind of the dude who focuses in on New Japan Pro Wrestling. Well, he's going to be here talking about some New Japan Pro Wrestling. It is NJPW on LOPR as Zanman takes a look at Wrestling Dontaku 2017. So, yeah, it's interesting stuff. Interesting stuff. It was headlined by Kenny Omega versus Tomohiro Ishii and in a rematch from the New Japan Cup, and just all kinds of good stuff going down on that show. If you're a New Japan Pro Wrestling fan or if you're interested in getting into it, I would definitely advise you to be on the lookout on Sunday and check it out as Zanman comes your way to bring you NJPW on LOPR looking at Wrestling Dontaku 2017. I hope that I am pronouncing that right. I wanted to say Wrestling Donatello. Yep. Donatello is cool. You know, he does machines, if you didn't know that. He does machines. And Michelangelo, he's a party dude. So, anyways, moving on here. Talking about SmackDown. Yeah, like I said, this was kind of a down-the-middle thing. We had Jinder Mahal versus Sami Zayn. I know a lot of people not very happy about the fact that Jinder got the win over Sami. Again, I don't take issue with that. I take issue with the overall thing with Jinder, the overall story arc with Jinder and how it has been executed. But I don't necessarily have a problem with him getting cheap heat by beating Sami Zayn, okay? That doesn't bug me. And I don't mind that's Sami's role right now, because I really do think that Sami is going to – there are bright things in the future for Sami Zayn, in my opinion. I think that good things are coming his way. So it was a decent match, but it was really nothing special, and Jinder kind of looked like a robot out there. It really looked choreographed, and it didn't endear me to Jinder Mahal any more than I was before I watched it. I'll put it that way. And that's exactly what they should have been trying to do. And I think that's what they were aiming to do here. You put him in the ring against a guy like Sami Zayn, who can work with just about anybody you want him to. And, you know, I think you're trying to sweeten people up on Jinder. It was a decent enough match. And I'm sure that some people out there whose opinion of Jinder were that he was like sub shit or something, you know, that he was just, you're scraping him off the bottom of your shoe. Well, I bet they saw this match against Sami Zayn and were like, oh, Jinder can work. Because, of course, Jinder can work. He's in WWE. They don't hire guys who just flat out can't work unless they've got some sort of gimmick, like the Great Khali or something, you know what I mean? But in this case, yeah, Jinder can work. He's just not all that great at it. And tonight really didn't sweeten me up on him any. So it was decent, but it was nothing special. Aiden English and Ty Dillinger was basically a squash match, and I am so thoroughly sick of the 10-10-10-10-10 thing that I wouldn't care if I never saw Ty Dillinger again, even though I like him. I do like that Aiden English is coming out there and singing and stuff, though. That was fun. And it made for a great interaction with Jericho backstage, with, you know, Jericho and Aiden English and Ronnie Young. So, yeah, I dug every bit of that. That was awfully fun. But the match between Dillinger and English, it may as well not have even happened. It was just a thing, you know. It was an old school, like, superstars match, basically. It's weird, because we saw when the Vaudevillains split up and other dude got fired, people were all like, Aiden English is in line for a push. I know I saw that. I believe it was Meltzer or somebody was saying, Aiden English is in line for a push. Oh, they're going to give him a push. This ain't a push. Ty Dillinger's the dude who basically, he took over the role that Tyler Breeze left behind in NXT, and he became the jobber to the stars. Ty Dillinger was getting his ass kicked on a regular basis. That was his gimmick, was he kept getting his ass kicked. That was the entirety of Ty Dillinger's gimmick. So he's far from a winner, and he's walking in the door here at SmackDown and beating Aiden English. So if this is a push, then goddamn, y'all, goddamn. Anyways, Naomi and Charlotte taking on Carmella and Natalya started as a handicap match, evolved into a regular tag team match when Charlotte was able to come down, and it culminated in, of course, the bad guys getting the victory. Then we saw whatever was going down with Becky. That was pretty good. The women are kind of in upheaval right now. There's a division between them almost straight down the middle of the roster, so I'm interested in seeing how this all breaks down, but it didn't really further anything. I mean, they told us where Becky falls. You know, what side is Becky on? When, honestly, anybody who has paid any attention to WWE since Becky showed up full well knew exactly what side Becky was going to be on. Becky's not turning heel anytime soon. They could have shocked us and turned her heel. That would have been something else right there. But this is not the time for that. If they were going to do it, they wouldn't do it in service to her making other people look good. It would be her turning heel and kind of getting heat for herself. It needs to be a bigger deal when Becky Lynch turns heel, if she ever does. This is not the scenario in which to do it. So they basically told us shit that we already knew with this match. Still, it was a pretty decent match. It was fairly entertaining. Sin Cara and Dolph Ziggler was just fine, but you knew exactly what was going to happen. You knew Ziggler was going to pick up the win, gathering some steam as he heads towards Nakamura. And the main event, much like last night, quality stuff. It was a damn good match. It got a lot of stuff done. It was the only eventful thing that happened on the entire show. Kevin Owens getting the victory there and taking out Chris Jericho, presumably ending the last big long run of Chris Jericho. This current run of Jericho appears to have come to an end at the hands of Kevin Owens tonight. Quality match. Good after the match stuff. I enjoyed all of it, very much like last night on Monday Night Raw. And of course, the other little things that were peppered in here and there. Some of the promos were okay. The whole Law and Order Fashion Files thing, that was excellent. I really loved that. So, you know, it kind of is what it is, man. This was a show that didn't get a lot accomplished. It did a lot. A lot of things happened on tonight's show, but we didn't really get a whole hell of a lot, really. Nothing was really pushed all that much more forward, you know what I mean? And the things that they did try to push forward, like, oh, let's show them that Jinder can wrestle. Well, it didn't work out so hot, you know what I mean? And when they were like, oh, I bet they're going to wonder what side Becky's on with this whole thing. Well, we already knew what side Becky was on, you know? And, you know, it just, I don't know. Everything was okay, with the exception of the main event, which was quite good. And, of course, the Fashion Police, which was phenomenal. So, I don't know. I'm kind of torn on this one. I got to go with what I did last night. This was a paint by numbers down the middle episode of SmackDown. That makes it a C inherently, but it did have a really good main event, which bumps it up. I gave last night's show a B minus, even though I questioned it and wanted to go to a C plus. I'm going to do the same thing for tonight because this was a better show than Raw by a very, very thin margin. Even though I think that Raw's main event was better than this main event. Still, it was a little bit overall better show, I kind of think. It wasn't, you know, I don't know. This is the tough. I'm giving it a B minus, just like Raw. Damn it. I need to quit talking myself into things. B minus is what this show is going to get. Could very easily be a C plus, though. This was a very middle of the road show. I hope that you will be back here next week to join me after Monday Night Raw, and then the next night after SmackDown as we bring the late shift back your way and recap all this stuff going down in WWE. You guys have yourselves a great week as we go along the course of the way here, and please, please take care of yourself out there in the really real world, and remember that nothing is trivial, all right? All right, much love, guys. We'll catch you next week. Bye, everybody. Bye. Bye. Bye.